This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Illinois State Treasurer Mike Frericks. Mike manages a $25 billion in investments in his office and claims that for every $1 spent to run the office, we Illinois residents receive $28 in return. He's been treasurer for a little over 2 years, a graduate of Yale University, a native of Gifford, Illinois, which is near Champaign-Urbana, and he made two predictions last year. One, he predicted the Cubs would play in November, be in the World Series. He was right on that. His second, that there would be no Illinois state budget. He was correct on that. And he's not very optimistic about solving the budget issue this year either. He talked about a variety of tools that the treasurer's office has to move the state forward. For example, there are over 700 different funds that the Illinois state treasurer can invest in. So he has almost $20 billion to invest. He's very proud of the fact that there's an ICASH program, which currently safeguards $2 billion in lost property that people can claim by going to illinoistreasurer.gov/ICASH. Then he also talked about a new program that forces insurance companies to pay beneficiaries that they haven't paid out on unpaid life insurance policies. This was opposed by many in the insurance industry, but Treasurer Frericks, in a bipartisan agreement, was able to get this through the legislature, and an audit has revealed that insurance companies are sitting on $550 million of unpaid life insurance policies. He also talked about a program called ABLE, Achieving Better Life Experiences. This is directed at individuals who are blind or have disabilities. There is a means test. Prior to this year, if you had more than $2,000 in earnings, you might lose your federal Social Security and other benefits. He has pushed through legislation that now ups the amount that a person could have in savings to $14,000. He's very proud of that, and this has been joined by 14 other states. It's called the ABLE program. And he just said that the treasurer's office, since we're a state with some very poor credit ratings, has received a triple A in Illinois funds investment pool, and that's the top rating anybody can have.
Thank you very much. You didn't get the extra tall podium. I thought I put in a request. Next time we'll do that. Well, thank you very much for that kind introduction. Thank you everyone for joining me here today at the City Club. I look out and I see a lot of friends, too many for me to name. I want to thank the elected officials who have already been announced or so. One of the things we also do in the treasurer's office is we are in charge of financial education for the state of Illinois. And we'll have some exciting news coming forward. But I wanted to point out Pam Perowski with BMO Harris, who also serves on the board of Econ Illinois, and for your help working with us on that very important part of our job. I look around and I see a lot of friends here in the audience today, but I look around and there is one who is missing. Paul Green. It is with sadness that I talk about him today because I am disappointed that after I'm done speaking, Paul won't be here to make fun of me for being too tall or talking too long or talking about the Chicago Cubs. Paul was intelligent, he was funny, and Paul was fair. Paul liked to remind me of how much he enjoyed one of my campaign debates. But Paul was the moderator of that debate, and to the extent that it was fun because Paul made it so. Paul was not your typical pundit or talking head. Paul was fun, and it was an honor to know him. It is, that being said, a pleasure to be back here with you today. 1 year ago, I stood before you and used baseball metaphors and imagery to talk about our state and the state budget. My state treasurer's office and tools my office has to provide residents of Illinois to better themselves and give some of my thoughts on the future of Illinois. Last year, I spoke about hope and wonder that comes with spring, especially with spring baseball. And I will say that I was 2 for 2 in my predictions last year. However, if you remember those predictions, I really wish I'd been wrong on one of them. The first one, my prediction, was that the Cubs would play in November and they would win the World Series. as a Cubs fan, it was a dream come true. I watched nearly every inning of every game. I felt like a kid again. And even though they might not admit it, I know that there are some Sox fans and Cardinals fans here in the audience who also got caught up in the excitement of that playoff run. Now, I'm not saying all of them. There are some Sox and Cardinals fans. Some are a little more diehard and a little less fun. But I'll say it was exciting when I was up in Wrigleyville on the night where they won the World Series to see how the city came together both that night and for the parade in a peaceful and joyful celebration. You saw people from different backgrounds, different sports preferences celebrating. Now, I got that prediction right. But my coaches, baseball coaches, growing up, taught me, don't gloat. Don't get too excited when you make a good play or you have a good hit. And that was pretty easy for me because I didn't have very many good plays or very many hits. But I feel pretty good about that prediction I made the World Series last year. The other prediction I really wish I had struck out on. I said I was hopeful that we'd have a full year budget in place before the final out of the World Series, but that I didn't think it would happen. And I really wish I had been wrong. Because now I see residents of our state being pitted against each other and divided into different teams. And I talked a lot last year in sports analogies, but I want to stop with the analogies for right now, because it bothers me when people ask me who is winning the game in Springfield. It is not a game, and we are all losing what is going on. Now, I think we all know this, and I could talk about the dysfunction in Springfield up until 1 o'clock and past. Today, however, I want to talk about the Illinois State Treasurer's Office and some of the tools we offer individuals and communities to help move Illinois forward. I want to provide examples of why these programs are so important and how they can help our state. And more importantly, rather than talking about the problems, I want to talk about solutions. So I want to close by answering your questions. Hopefully we'll leave some time for that. I believe in setting the bar high, because when you do that, I generally can reach it, and gives me an advantage. No, to be serious, I believe in setting the bar high, and I think most parents understand this. When I challenge my daughter, when I set expectations high for her, she works to achieve that goal. And though she may fall short of perfection, she always seems to improve when we raise standards. And the opposite, of course, is also true. When we set low expectations for our children, when we do not help them, they do not live up to their potential. They frequently fall short. Now, I frequently get asked what I do for a living. And I tell people I'm the state treasurer. I'm the chief investment officer of the state of Illinois. I'm in charge of investing our state's money. To which people will frequently say, well, yeah, I know that, but you work for a state that has no money. What do you do with yourself all day long? Now, I start with that because I have to tell you that despite all the problems we have, there is money to invest. The state of Illinois has over 700 different funds with a fund balance of about $12 billion. We help municipalities and local units of government pool their investments to get a greater return than they could on their own. We manage about $5 billion there. And we help families invest in themselves to give their kids a brighter future through our college savings programs, about another $8 to $9 billion there. So I would say we take our job very seriously. Every dollar we bring in to the state is a dollar that the governor and the General Assembly don't have to raise in taxes, or a dollar they don't have to make in cuts to important services like education. So that is important, but I think probably maybe more importantly, we help people invest in themselves and to give themselves and their families a brighter future. And that's what I want to talk about today. We also fight on behalf of the consumers of the state. Our unclaimed property program called ICASH safeguards more than $2 billion in forgotten or misplaced money and property until we can return it to its rightful owner. We fight to make sure that life insurance benefits are paid to the people who are owed them. We fight to make sure that rebate checks reach the right person. And just this month, I had a great opportunity to return a Purple Heart to a brave man who fought for his country and earned that medal in Vietnam. But he had lost track of it. And it was just really heartwarming to return that to him and to his family. We have stock certificates that were forgotten in safe deposit boxes and investment accounts that were abandoned. We have checks and lots of refunds, rebates, and vendor checks. But it is not just money for individuals. We have money for businesses, not-for-profits, units of government, and other organizations. So I want to make a plug. No, I'm going to give you a homework assignment. Everyone here love homework as much as I did? This is going to be easy. Later today, when you're done, I want you to visit our website, illinoistreasurer.gov, and click on iCash. I want you to check your name. Check for your family members, your business, your nonprofit, your unit of government, whatever you want to check for. Because we know that if we can get more money into your hands, at a time when state government is not so good about paying vendors or keeping promises made on contracts, we think it's very important that we get more money out into the community, circulating, hiring people, and it does a lot more good than it does sitting in my bank account in Springfield. So your homework assignment, again, is to go to... Wow, you guys are all going to pass this test with flying colors. IllinoisTreasurer.gov, click on iCash, search. We'd love to get some money to you. We're actually working with the City Club to return some money to this esteemed organization. And Ed, I hope you can use some of that money to replenish your stock of coffee mugs. Now, not all of our unclaimed property is such a pleasant surprise, such as baseball cards or casino chips that people stash away in a safe deposit box. Last year, for those of you who were here, you might recall, I talked about unpaid life insurance policies. Unpaid life insurance policies, like other unclaimed property, are submitted to the Illinois Treasurer's Office, or at least they should be. 2 years ago, when I was sworn in, I did what a lot of elected officials do. I asked a lot of questions, built a talented team, and then we audited the office. I wanted to know what I didn't know. When I learned that some life insurance companies were not paying death benefits when they knew that their customer had passed away, I was shocked. And then I just got plain angry. Let me be perfectly clear. There are a lot of life insurance companies that do it right. They treat their customers with respect, and they go the extra mile to pay life insurance benefits to the rightful beneficiaries. In fact, more than 20 of them work with our office and allow audits to make sure that they do not have unpaid life insurance policies on their books. Between 2011 and 2015, the Treasurer's Office identified more than $550 million. That is more than $500 million in unpaid benefits and worked to return them to the proper heirs. But there are companies. Thank you. But there are companies that acknowledge that these unpaid policies are baked into their business model. They contend that a robust effort to pay these death benefits would be detrimental to their bottom line. They argue that the onus of claiming benefits falls upon the beneficiary or heir regardless of circumstances. Forgive me, but I am unmoved by that argument. I have heard numerous stories that make my blood boil about people who did not get money that was owed to them. But I just want to highlight one of them here today. I'd like to introduce you to Lynn Soto. Lynn, could you stand or wave, people? Lynn graciously accepted my invitation to be here today so I can share her story, and we can highlight how important this issue is. So Lynn will tell you that she is no saint, but based on what I know, she's pretty close. Lynn is a successful lawyer and the proud mother of three biological sons. One, Frank, is severely learning disabled. And at school, Frank had two great friends, Brooks and Reeves, who are also severely learning disabled. In 2007, Brooks and Reeves were in a tragic car accident. The boys survived, but they lost their mother and their sister. And when no other family member stepped up to take care of these two beautiful boys, Lynn stepped up and took the boys into her home. Brooks and Reeves were 16 years old at the time. The boys didn't know. They had no idea their mother had purchased a life insurance policy. She bought it because she knew that if anything would happen to her, her two boys would need extra resources. But when she died, her boys didn't receive one dime. Nearly 10 years later, we finally forced the company to pay out as the result of an audit. The same type of audit that found the more than $550 million, more than half a billion dollars, that should have been paid out to Illinois citizens. The same audits that some life insurance companies say are unnecessary. The same companies that are suing to block such audits and say they have no obligation to pay if the beneficiaries don't initiate the paperwork. They would blame 16-year-old orphans with severe learning disabilities for not claiming what their mother paid for, what she knew they would need. Once that money was turned over to our office, we took a closer look. And it's not like it was impossible to find them. After a bit of research by staff, nothing fancy, primarily using Google, we found a police report, which led us to telephone numbers, which led us to Lynn and her family. Almost a decade after that accident, after money should have been paid to those two young boys, we were able to fulfill her mother's wishes, their mother's wishes. This shouldn't happen. It should not take that long to keep a promise made when selling a life insurance policy. Lynn, I want to thank you for letting us share this story here today. We really appreciate your efforts. I'm going to take it aside. I want to share another story about Lynn. I told you you have an assignment to go see if we have money that belongs to you. We do reach out to people and attempt to give money away. And it might be one of the hardest parts of my job. And looking at some of you, you're questioning, how difficult can it be to give away money? Well, we called Lynn and told her the state of Illinois had a significant amount of money for her sons. We just need to verify their names. And she said, I am familiar with identity thieves. And I recognize a scam when I hear one. I think we tried a second time, and she really recognized a scam, and she hung up. But she is a conscientious citizen who went to our website and found a phone number and called my office to let us know that someone out there was impersonating the Illinois State Treasurer's office trying to steal identities. I want to thank you for not giving up, Lynn. So my office has taken steps to make sure that beneficiaries of life insurance policies will be paid in a more timely fashion. Last year, we introduced legislation that requires life insurance companies to review their records to make sure they're not holding life insurance benefits that should have been paid. And publicly, it had strong bipartisan support. Privately, an army of insurance industry lobbyists fought me at every turn. To build support for this issue, I traveled around the state and I told stories like Lynn's. We brought the story directly to people's doorsteps. We built enough bipartisan momentum and changed enough minds that legislation was passed and eventually signed into law by the governor. Going forward, life insurance companies must use Social Security records to confirm that they are not holding on to money that should be paid for and was intended for beneficiaries. And now it's time for that next step. Legislation introduced this year would require life insurance companies to look backward. It would require companies to look back 20 years to 1996 to ensure that they're not sitting on life insurance benefits that should have been paid. And yes, again, this is a lobbyist employment bill. Some people involved in legislation know what I'm talking about. Simply, this year's legislation will require, maybe there's a lobbyist here who wants to sign up for some of that money going around. This year's legislation will require life insurers to specifically identify any policies that were in effect at the time of death and to notify beneficiaries if they have not already been paid. I just think this is the right thing to do. Now, we tried to do this last year. Last year, that sometimes happens in Springfield, we didn't get everything we wanted, so we compromised. We amended our bill. We put a runner on base, and now it is time to bring her home. So just one more word about unclaimed property. Any program with more than $2 billion in assets should have a robust system in place to make sure the right people receive the right money. But the unclaimed property system I inherited was old and antiquated. The system was put together before the internet, and that's why we are making changes. We want to make it easier to claim your policies online. We asked the legislature to give us the authority to work with the Department of Revenue so we can share the names of unclaimed property owners to determine if individuals have recently filed tax returns. And if they have, we know where they live. If they have, we will be able to simply mail them a check. The point is, we must always be looking for ways to improve how we serve the people of Illinois. Many of the ways that we can improve services are through common sense solutions that government has the ability to implement now. We just have to set the bar higher, and we have to expect more. And this is true for the Treasurer's Office, and it should be true across state and local government. Now, many in this room here hopefully know about our 529 college savings programs, Bright Start and Bright Directions. Today, there are more than 450,000 active accounts to help young men and women go to college, trade school, or other accredited institutions of higher education. Shortly after taking office, we helped create a new saving option. It is called Achieving a Better Life Experience, or as we call it, the ABLE program. And for those of you who haven't heard of that, it was just launched this year. We know that there are families out there that have different concerns for their children, but they also want to give their children a bright future. ABLE will work an awful lot like a college savings program. It creates opportunities for families to invest or save their own money for their own family members who have blindness or a disability. Families caring for a person with a blindness or disability often rely on federal programs so their children can receive therapy, medical treatment, or other assistance. This assistance is means tested. The individual's net worth cannot exceed $2,000. It means an individual, in order to receive these benefits, cannot own a car, cannot own a house, can't have more than $2,000 sitting in a checking account. Before ABLE, we had families working in Illinois turning down food stamps because the value attached to the food stamps might disqualify their child from receiving their Social Security benefits. Moms and dads would tell family members not to write checks to their grandchildren. I talked to a father who said around the holidays he had to tell his dad, you can write checks, you can give money to Sally and Timmy, but you can't give to Johnny because Johnny might lose his benefits. I talked with a mother who has a daughter with Down syndrome, and she works. She does such a good job working at her law firm. She opens the mail, she delivers it, she does it with such energy. Her law firm likes her. They wanted to give her more hours, and they wanted to give her a raise. And her mother had to tell them, no, don't give my daughter a raise because it might jeopardize her benefits. All of these examples are wrong. They're unintended consequences of another system. But ABLE will now allow these families to save up to $14,000 a year and up to $100,000 in an ABLE savings account without threatening their federal benefits. This is a program that is going to make a great impact on a lot of families. Now, with ABLE, and Skinny gave me a nice shout-out. I want to thank him very much for the work he has done for decades with the Special Olympics community. We're very much looking forward to partnering with them to help get the word out of how this new program can help transform people's lives. For the first time, parents will actually be able to put something aside to give their kid a brighter future. We will no longer have examples of parents who write their disabled child out of their will in order to maintain the disability payments they depend upon. So, I was very excited. There are a lot of investment managers out there who have come and talked to me about working with the Treasurer's Office on our college savings plans. And so I was excited to tell them about this new opportunity. And the response from many of them, when I asked if they'd like to work with the state of Illinois, was no thanks. Now, I was surprised. You know, they really didn't want to bid, said it couldn't happen. And what we could have done, they said they could set up an investment program for these families. They said if we had similar fees to our college savings, they couldn't make money off it. You see, I told you we had 450,000 college savings accounts. We anticipate in Illinois about 36,000 ABLE accounts in the next 5 years. The size, the economy of scale, wasn't there. So they said it simply wasn't going to work. The numbers weren't going to add up. Now, at this point, I could have blamed the investment managers. I could have called them out. I could have made excuses and said, can't be done. But I think you would agree that the families and people who ABLE serves would not have benefited by that approach. So we expected more, and we set the bar high. Illinois is a big state, and we knew that if we couldn't make this work, other states might have similar problems, and so we called around. We reached out to other states, not just in the Midwest, but across the country. We invited other states to a summit in Chicago to talk about how we get this program up and running. And we didn't just limit it to blue states. We worked with states and treasurers who have worldviews that are completely different than mine, such as the Kansas state treasurer. Now, you might know the Kansas state treasurer because he just ran for Congress in a special election. And I can tell you, we don't agree on a lot of political issues. But we were able to work together to create a program that leverages the private sector to help families help themselves. And because we didn't give up, because we didn't point fingers, today we have a 15-state partnership that can help as many as 500,000 families in the next 5 years. I stand up here and you clap and it feels really good. But really, I have a dedicated team that's at one table and spread out amongst a few other tables that made this happen. And it would not have without them. So hopefully the folks at that table realize the applause is for you. So those states in the National ABLE Alliance have a combined population of more than 81 million people. And we leverage that much larger pool to negotiate the lowest fees in the country. I know it is fashionable now amongst politicians to talk about how you're the best, the greatest, it's the most wonderful thing ever. The biggest. But this is a verifiable fact. We have the lowest fees in the country. And better still, we are poised to grow this group with active negotiations occurring with other states that will drive down costs even further. When we get more states to join, we get to negotiate prices lower. We could have not achieved this without setting a high bar for the program. We looked past partisanship and built alliances with some unlikely partners who agreed that we should expect more from government. Now, the ABLE program is an example of states acting as incubators of ideas and working together to address a challenge and to find a solution. And this is what government should be, seeing a need, crafting a solution, and creating a tool that individuals and families can use to better themselves and those around them. Families that are your relatives, your friends, and your neighbors. Families such as Katie Driscoll and her daughter Grace, who have joined me here today. Katie and Grace, Grace is adorable. Grace, can you stand on your chair and wave to everybody? All right. Thank you, Grace. We got to know each other in my office before a press conference. Katie and Grace live in Palos Park. 5 years ago, Katie launched the changingthefaceofbeauty.org website. She put together a makeshift photo studio in her suburban garage. And the driving force behind changingthefaceofbeauty.org was a mother who simply wanted her daughter to be seen for the person she is. And a mother believed that she was not alone. For 5 years, Katie has worked to persuade retailers to use equal representation of children and people with disabilities in their advertising in order to change perceptions of beauty. Katie hopscotched across the country, offering photo clinics to parents like her so that they too could have photos to use while promoting their cause. Katie spent 5 years while raising a family. She has several other children. and confronting the day-to-day challenges of life, fighting to change the world. Clearly, Katie is not looking for a handout. She just wants her daughter Grace to have the same opportunities as everybody else. And ABLE Accounts will help Katie leave something more for her daughter. It will give Grace a brighter future. ABLE Accounts will make the journey just a little bit easier for families across Illinois, and I firmly believe across our country. So thank you again, Katie. Thank you, Grace. I really appreciate your help and being here with me today. So the Treasurer's Office has other programs I want to touch upon briefly so we leave some time for question and answers, because we will have more improvements to announce later this year. Our college savings program continues to grow. Last year, some of you may recall, we renegotiated fees in our Bright Directions portfolio. We went on to be recognized as one of the two best advisor-sold programs in the country. We actually, from Morningstar rating agencies, got a credit upgrade. I should probably say that again. Illinois, the credit upgrade. I know some of you are questioning. You haven't heard those words together, starting in a sentence for a while, but it happened. And this year, we expect more changes, positive changes, some common sense changes to our Bright Start and our Bright Directions programs. At a time when uncertainty hangs upon us, we need to encourage our residents that college is within reach and that we can make saving for college more affordable. We will continue to fight to let families keep more of their money for school, for education, by lowering fees paid to investment managers. This year is the end of a 10-year contract for our Bright Start program, and we've already put out for a competitive bid. We'll be announcing the winner and program improvements later this summer. Many of you know that the Secure Choice Retirement Savings Program that my office is working on. It's an attempt to address the retirement savings crisis in this country. And we're working with our partners in the business community, payroll providers, and the financial industry to help stand up this very important program and to make it as turnkey as possible. We expect a phased-in approach beginning next year, and I look forward to discussing our progress at my next City Club speech. But let's talk briefly about credit ratings, interest rates, and what might come next. I think as I was standing out in the lobby, everyone expected me to be talking about those things, so let's talk about them. As a state, our credit rating is bad. You all know this. You didn't come here to learn this. This is not news. Earlier this year, you may remember that the credit houses hinted Illinois could drop to junk bond status if the May legislative adjournment date comes and goes without a complete budget. And just this week, Moody's announced it will review 7 public colleges and universities in Illinois for potential credit downgrade because the state has gone nearly 2 years without a thoughtful, complete spending plan. The penchant to demonize personalities instead of finding compromise threatens irreparable damage to our state. The willingness to watch our higher education system teeter on the brink will do more than undermine our economy for the next few years. It will provide harm to the next generation. We need a budget agreement. Now, I don't want to end on a down note. It's not a great way to leave a speech. Many of you also know Illinois remains a great credit risk because of guarantees that exist for those who purchase our state's debt, those who lend the state money. Many of you may not know, however, the Treasurer's Office also has instruments that receive credit ratings, in addition to our college savings plans. The Illinois Funds is a local government investment pool that invests dollars for local units of government, such as counties, municipalities, and school districts. By pooling investments, we are able to generate rates of return typically not available if the individual units had invested by themselves. S&P Global Ratings assigns a AAA credit rating to the Illinois Funds investment pool, and that is the highest rating available. A strong positive rating counters the string of downgrades and negative outlooks issued to instruments issued by the state. This top-notch rating reflects our approach to investing and taxpayer money. It shows our success at balancing the access and availability of funds while receiving a strong return on investment for this type of product. And I point this out to show you that a good credit rating is possible when people put politics aside and come to an agreement on strategies that are best for the state of Illinois. With that said, I want to thank you for coming here today and thank you for your interest in our State and Treasurer's Office. as we're ready for the question and answer, I'm going to talk about a few takeaways from today. First takeaway is our life insurance conversation. When we came into office, we identified a problem, we identified a solution, and identified a way to implement that solution. In doing so, we knew that the solution was not everything that we wanted, nor was everything that our opponents wanted. However, the solution implementation was the result of honest compromise and included the acknowledgement that we thought more needed to be done. We said we planned to do more in 2017, and today we are doing just that. We are working with all involved to secure that next win for the people of this state. When we talk about ABLE, I think the takeaway is that we identified a need, and when conventional leaders told us that some problems might not have a solution, we didn't stop the game, take our ball, and go home. Instead, we put together a team that could overcome the naysayers. We worked with a diverse group of states to create a unique solution. And that solution, the National ABLE Alliance, is the best in the industry and the best in the country. I'm just saying that Illinois is the best. Illinois has the best program, as does Iowa, as does Minnesota, as does Rhode Island and New Jersey and North Carolina, as does Kansas, Arizona, Nevada, Montana, and Alaska. We all have the best program, and we got that by working together. So the solution really will be the best in the country, and I believe, like the Cubs, it has a very bright future ahead of it. World Series championships are not won in one game or by one individual. They are built by a team and by steady dedication. They advance from one at-bat to the next, one game at a time. That is how we succeed, and that is how we will grow the state of Illinois, by putting together small victories. I want to thank you for your time and attention, and thank you for joining me here with the great City Club. And Ed, this is a final, actual ending of my speech.
Thank you, Treasurer Furex, and we have a few questions here.
Just questions, no jokes?
Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll get to that. In fact, I got one from Paul Green last night. Your comment where he said you were too tall, too short, whatever. And you said, in your Little League career down there in Gifford, you were known as having a hole in your bat and that. You have one hell of a strike zone, Mike. You probably never walk. I'll tell you that. Anyhow, this is from the mayor of Franklin Park, Barrett Peterson.
I think Barrett had to leave, but I'm happy to answer
okay.
his question.
Has funding for the senior real estate tax deferral program been approved?
So that is a good question. Unfortunately, we have gone basically the last 2 years without a full budget in place. And that creates some problems for us. One of the problems it creates a perception that the state is never going to pay out any money without a budget. And I want to destroy one of those misconceptions. So we've been encouraging people to go to our iCash website, and they said, why would I go there? You're not going to pay me anyway. Because remember, for the longest time, lottery winners were not being paid. And I tell them the unclaimed property is different. These are non-appropriated funds because the money does not belong to the state. It belongs to the state citizens. I hold that in trust, and all the last 2 years, when there's been a budget or not, I've been able to write checks for unclaimed property. We've been able to run our college savings program because, once again, these families are not putting money, not giving it over to the state. We work with the private sector, and they have it in individual accounts. And so there are some things that we don't have the authority to spend on, but things like unclaimed property and college savings, we do, because it's never belonged to the state. We are just holding on to your money. And the same thing will be true with ABLE accounts.
We've got some really – can I move it a little? We have a lot of good questions here. This is from Jennifer Burrows. Jennifer, where are you? Right back there. Moody's just downgraded ratings for Northeastern Illinois University. Is looking at other state schools. She's a parent of high school students. Her question is, why should I send my child to a state-run university?
No, I thought there were supposed to be some softballs that my staff was going to. No? We didn't get those in? That's a tough question. I live down in Champaign. My mother retired from the University of Illinois. My younger brother and his wife work for the University of Illinois. My older brother works as a carpenter for the University of Illinois. I have great respect not just for higher institutions of higher education, but specifically for state-funded ones. Traditionally, this was supposed to be a low-cost option so that more people could have access to higher education. And we are just falling down on that commitment. I mean, I would love to tell you, send your kids to U of I, to ISU, to Northeastern or Eastern, but the decision you've got to make in the best interest of your child. Some of these schools may not keep their doors open. And I think, quite frankly, there's some people in state government who'd be just happy with that. There are people who clearly, these are not hostages, they're victims. People who believe that the private sector can do a better job. But I think we see a lot of for-profit universities, not all of them, but some of them prey upon young people. They get them maxed out in debt, and they give them a degree that's not worth anything. I think we should keep our commitment to quality public higher education. I hear politicians talk about how much they care about education. They love education. They sign all kinds of bills to support education. I don't believe that education in 2017 ends at the 12th grade. And when you make no efforts to fund higher education, and when you disparage scholarships for the most needy students in this state, then you do not support education in the state. I get a little worked up about this. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
Calm down. Take it easy.
Woo! Very good long answer. So maybe we should almost move to the lightning round.
All right.
Shorter answer.
I'll attempt.
Oh, this one's a softball.
Great,
not,
we got one of those.
Not from your staff, but this is from Greg Bales, who's with Senator Dick Durbin's office. Greg, where are you? Okay. Your great work on Secure Choice, ABLE, and other programs at your office have required the support of Governor Rauner. Has he been a good partner on those initiatives?
I'm not sure that's the softball I was expecting when you said that.
It's a curveball.
So let's see. With ABLE, not too much. I mean, people ask me what it's like to work with the governor. And I say, I don't do it very much. And they say, oh, he doesn't want to work with you. And I say, well, we take, if you can imagine, all the responsibility of state government as a big pie. The governor has a large piece of that pie. The treasurer has a much smaller piece than the comptroller does, the attorney general does. And so with much of my responsibilities, we don't have to work with the governor. He has his responsibilities. I have given him my advice on what he should do. He has taken none of it. He hasn't really returned the favor by giving advice to me. So, no, we don't have to work too much. With Secure Choice, the governor does get to make appointments to our board. And there, I think, we initially ran into some trust issues. And it probably slowed down the implementation of a program that's going to help, we think, 1.2 million people. But as I said earlier, and this is something my staff, we like to talk about, it is very easy to point fingers. It's very easy to make excuses. It's very easy to stand up in front of a microphone and blame someone else. But I think we've seen in 2 years, running television commercials and standing in front of microphones blaming other people hasn't really moved the state forward. And so in this case, we sat down with his appointees and we took the time to build up trust. It is very easy to lose trust. You can do that in a hurry. You get caught in an obvious lie and you lose trust. It takes a while to build it back up. And that we have spent time on. I think we have that trust now, and we are working together to implement a program that is going to help provide a brighter future for a lot of people in the state so they can actually enjoy their golden years.
Great. Okay, continuing with these questions. This is from Dr. Teresa Garate with the Annixter Center. Teresa, where are you, doctor? Right down here in front. As a minority woman, she'd like to know what you've done for minority women in Illinois.
Great. That's a great question. I could have talked about that for a while in my speech, but they limit me to around 20 to 25 minutes. You know, when I came in, after having campaigned around this state, one of the best things about running statewide is it forces you to go all around the state, to go all around the city. And you see what a truly vast and diverse state we have. And then you come into the treasurer's office, and the office doesn't really reflect that diversity. And you look at the financial institutions we work with, and they don't always reflect the diversity I just saw on the campaign trail. And so we made changes in our office and brought in very competent people who reflected the diversity of the state, and we sacrificed nothing in doing that. We really brought in the best people. And then we looked at some of the companies we worked with, broker-dealers. When I first came in, about 1.4% of our assets that went through broker and dealers went through MWVD firms, minority, women, veteran, disabled firms. 1.4%. After a year being in office, because we made it a priority in my office, 60%, 60%, not 1-6, 60% went through MWVD firms. They said they couldn't be found, they didn't exist. You know, with a little bit of effort, we found them. We invited them into play in the game, and they were ready to. They had to perform, and they have. And then our next step is we look at some of the companies we invest in. My primary responsibility in investment is to get a good rate of return. Now, there are companies out there, like McKinsey has done a study of 366 companies that found that companies with more diverse boards of directors outperform the median in their industry. And why is that? I find in my office when you get more people sitting around a table with more backgrounds, with different ideas, you tend to be able to respond to a diverse base of customers. If you get a lot of people around a table, the same background, the same ideas, the same education, thinking the same thing, it doesn't really add much to the conversation. So we invest a lot of money, and then that gives us proxy votes in front of boards and commissions. We've made a real effort to call upon these companies to diversify their boards, to add more women, to add more minorities. And it's not just feel-good liberalism. We know if we're going to make an investment, we want them to be performing. We don't want them leaving any money on the table because they don't understand a certain background, a certain group. They're not able to market them and capture that. So we're doing this because this will actually benefit the state of Illinois. Diversity is good for business.
Some incredibly good answers and some incredibly good questions. Thank everybody. This is from Dave Marzell, the Center for Economic Progress. David, where are you?
Right in front of you.
Right down this 50-yard line here. Okay. Please highlight some examples of federal regulatory rollback efforts that could have a negative financial impact on Illinois residents. And what are you doing in response?
Okay. So this is not a softball question, but I have to let you know that Mr. Marzell serves on the Secure Choice Board. So we came in, we put a lot of effort into setting this program up. One of the concerns we had was the Department of Labor guidelines on ERISA protections. We worked very hard for about a year and a half. I personally traveled, met with the Secretary of Department of Labor a couple of times. We got them to promulgate a regulation that will allow us to set up this program in a way that does not put a risk or a burden on businesses in Illinois. Sounds like the right thing to do, right? I mean, especially when I frame the question that way, it sounds like the right thing to do. But trust me, I'm framing it right. But because that was a Department of Labor rule promulgated under the Obama administration, the new Congress has come in and said, we don't like any of those rules. We are going to use Congressional Review Act to roll back these regulations. Now, I get if you have a problem with a specific rule, but if you campaign saying we want to help businesses and reduce regulations, this is not the place to do it. What this will do if they roll it back is going to expose employers to additional litigation risk. But I think there is just a single-minded desire to do back to away anything that President Obama did that they're going to cut off their noses and spite their faces. So the CRA has already passed through the U.S. Congress, and it's scheduled for a vote in the Senate, and we are working very hard to inform U.S. senators of the negative consequences of doing this. I mean, we're going to move forward in Illinois. It's going to adversely affect employers in the state if they roll this back. But other states out there may choose not to address the retirement crisis in this country. And the last thing I'll say on this is a lot of these same people talk about states' rights. They say that states ought to be innovators. They ought to be laboratories for democracy. And yet when a state like Illinois chooses to innovate, to try a state-centric approach to a national problem, and hopefully be a model, you know, positive or negative for the rest of the country, they say, no, we know better for you. I have little use for hypocrisy like that. And I'll stop.
Okay, thank you. And a similar question was submitted by Zach Kautsky of Local 881 with the UFCW. So we have two quick questions left. This is from Don Davis with the Bronner Group. Has the Treasurer's Office explored or pursued investing in social impact bonds?
We're in the lightning round here. I would say yes, we've explored. Yes, I have very much interest in this. I've spoken with people in this field. One of my best friends, best man at my wedding, I was best man at his, works in this field. But we came into office. We're making changes to our college savings programs. We're setting up an ABLE program. We're setting up a retirement savings program. We're making a lot of changes. There is a limited bandwidth, and so we don't have a huge office. We don't have thousands of employees. Fortunately, I have some of the best employees, but they have a limited number of hours, and so it's something that I intend to get to. We're not there yet.
How many employees are there in your office?
About 165 to 170.
So this is our final question from Warren Ribley. Warren, where are you today?
Over there.
Okay. Please provide an update on ILGIF.
Happy to.
Good. Briefly explain how it works. Lightning round, remember.
So I'll say, preface by saying again, Warren Ribley is a former employee of the Treasurer's Office, but not under me. This was not a softball put forward, but if Warren seems to know about our programs, it's because Warren has been involved in state government and implementing business-friendly solutions for many years, more than the Treasurer's Office. Whether it be in Department of Commerce or with the medical district, he is very interested in investing in the state and helping businesses to grow. And that's what ILGIF does. It stands for the Illinois Growth and Innovation Fund. So the vast majority of my investments have to be in secure instruments. I invest in treasury notes and commercial paper, highly rated commercial paper and repurchase agreements, very boring things. You know, most people think of us investing in a stock market. We don't do that with the vast majority. But the Illinois General Assembly gave us the ability to invest up to 3% of our state assets in technology development accounts. Basically, we get to invest in VC firms and growth funds if they have a focus on the state of Illinois. Because we think these are not grants that we're giving out to businesses, but we are investing in companies. We receive a return on that investment, but in addition, if we help grow companies here, and they grow and hire more people in Illinois, they pay more in taxes, that is a added benefit. That's the gravy on top to this, because we're going to help out there. And so when we came in, this had been a program of 2%, hadn't been implemented for 4 years. We worked very closely with the Illinois Venture Capital Association to make sure that we got this up and running, and over the next probably 2.5 years now, we intend to invest about $220 million into the Illinois company, helping to grow medical, biomedical, and technology companies here in the state because we think that's what we have to be doing. As I said earlier, you know, you don't win a World Series off of one home run. I mean, unless it's hitting the ninth inning of the last game of the World Series, but you pile up a series of wins. And you pile up wins by putting runners on base and moving them around. And the Illinois Growth and Innovation Fund is helping to do our part to help move the state forward.
Thank you, Joe Madden, Jr. Okay. Any prediction for this November? Amanda, if you come up here. Let's give Treasurer Frerichs a big round of applause.